This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right now, do you think you're going to get out of this?
Oh, I like it. What, on goal difference? Go on, give it me, Chris. Tell us how.
I think we'll do it by a point.
So you've already sat there, because we all do it, right? We all sit there, look at the league table, work out the games. You know, I've been doing it for the last 4 or 5 weeks, working out what Leicester can do, what Wolves can do, Man United. You know, and there's so many different permutations. I sometimes look at it and go, oh, no, we're going to miss out. The result's going to go against us. And then you go back a week later, you're like, do you know what? Actually, things are looking a little bit more rosy. You generally believe that, yeah?
Yes. Firmly.
Yes. Firmly.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
The corner and Trezeguet, the man who came up with the goals against Crystal Palace, puts Villa on course for a huge step towards the safety line.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host. Joining me for what is it, the survival special?
Could well be.
Mr. Chris Budd.
Hello.
Welcome back. And Mr. Dan Rogers from the villaunderground.com. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Hello. None of this was ever in doubt. Let the record show. I predicted this would be some survival. Can you imagine what the relegation is going to be like from here? Oh, the anguish.
The false hope. The false hope. One last twist in the tale. Anyway, we will be discussing, of course, Aston Villa's fabulous win. The first time in 22 years they've beaten Henry Lansbury's Arsenal. Well, that's what it could have been if Henry Lansbury was any good. He got on the pitch there. I thought that was a beautiful moment. Getting on the pitch against his old club, his former club. Didn't touch the ball, though.
Almost poetic, some say.
Smith likes him. He was giving him a nice little pat on the back before he went on. He treats him like his son. That's why he's kept him around.
That's why he wraps him in cotton wool, isn't it, for his hamstrings?
Yeah. Anyway, coming up in the show, we will have a look at the Arsenal game. There's always things that Villa can't do. One of them was beat Arsenal at Villa Park. Another one is beat Man United at Villa Park. Liverpool at Villa Park as well is sometimes pretty difficult. But when the chips were down, we pulled it out of the bag. And I don't know how, miraculously, other clubs, the last thing they want to do, is to stay in the Premier League. So we've taken full advantage of that. We'll look at this survival picture going into the last weekend of the Premier League. And we are on the grid in pole position at the moment in terms of the teams that can still drop out. Coming up also... quickly, we will look at the 3 points. We will look at Nigel Pearson getting sacked, which has huge relevancy for Villa's predicament. Coventry City have light at the end of the tunnel in terms of having a stadium to play in and not having to go through the turmoil of playing at, what's it called again? The trillion dollar stadium, trillion trophy.
150 billion million.
And we, what, minutes since they last won? And finally, we will also quickly look at another LA, Los Angeles team being founded out of thin air. And coming up to close off the show, finally, the underrated and overrated featuring Mr. Mark Delaney and Mr. Charlie and Zogbia, Charles to his friends. Right then, any Villa news? Nothing really doing the rounds. Obviously, the focus is on trying to avoid the drop. A few people have started to get refunds dropping in for their season tickets. Also, in terms of next season, we're starting... Well, actually, the Warwickshire are trialling... is it the Bears versus Warwickshire?
Bears v. Pears.
Yeah, Bears v. the Pears, yeah. The so-called local derby.
Was it the second day they're going to have some fans in?
They're yeah, they're going to allow members
fans
back.
Free tickets.
I mean, it's, the thing is, county championship cricket, you have about, I don't know, a couple of hundred people in a ground that holds like 25,500.
Not on that day, matey.
Yeah.
Social distancing is normally in full effect in county cricket anyway. But no, that is a clue that that's just one of the sporting events in the country that are starting to, let's say, test the waters. But the first reports are October seems a likely date. We're still waiting for Aston Villa to reach out to their fans. And it looks like I'll have to... send them a message to start discussing the implications of fans going back.
Yeah, if you could remind them we're still here. That'd
yeah, be nice. I will do, actually. It's my duty to my brethren. Right, so also, we found out if we do stay in the Premier League, we will be playing Leeds West Brom. That's for certain, as the Championship drew to a close. It's weird. I mean, Premier League doesn't look like teams want to stay up in the Premier League. And then you look at the Championship automatic promotion picture, and there was three teams who were still in the mix. Baggies, Brentford, Fulham. And God knows what was going on there. But Brentford burnt out in the last, bottled it in the last two games after wiping all teams that crossed their path away. And then the last two games, and they're playing nothing special. Was it Stoke and then Barnsley?
Yeah. Relegation fodder.
Yeah.
Brentford bottle jobs.
Yeah.
Bottled it totally, and they will now play Swansea in the first playoff game.
Went ballistic, didn't they?
And Fulham could have taken advantage, and they also bottled it, and West Brom didn't even bother winning. They probably knew that nobody else wanted the job, so...
it's remarkable. I think they're coming up in even worse shape than us in terms of squad.
Who, the Baggies?
Yeah.
Yeah, because Brentford, if they had the game before this one, if they'd won that, they'd have been in pole position going into the last day. It was quite spectacular. They'd actually beaten the tougher team, shall we say, in the Championship and bottled it at the end. And yeah, as Chris mentioned, Forest, unbelievable. They just need one point. I mean, they've been in the playoffs for a long time now and were seen as a given to be in there. And with two games to go after faltering, they still just needed one point to confirm it. And if they didn't get that, there needed to be a goal difference swing of seven goals, I think. And there they were getting beat 4-1, was it? And Swansea managed to win 4-1. I fancy them against Brentford, actually. I think they're going to do them. And then I think Fulham will probably do Cardiff, and it'll be Fulham versus Swansea in the final.
I mean, a Swansea-Cardiff final normally would be tasty, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be an interesting one, for sure. But then again, it's not that interesting when the fans aren't there, so it's probably not as tasty as it first sounds. Anyway, hopefully we will... the upshot is, I think the Premier League will be a better league next year with the Leeds and the Baggies in. And if, let's say, Swansea or Fulham get up, I think it improves on your
Bournemouth, Watford and Norwich. See ya.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an upgrade in the product, isn't it, you'd say?
Yeah, I mean, that's of course if Villa Villa stay up. If Villa go down, then it's a massive decrease in the product.
Well, I mean, obviously we've played our Hawkeye card already, so that guarantees us Premier League status over and above the parochial clog dancers from the regions, so we would be fine.
Right, anyway, on to the 3 points. Point number one, bit of a bizarre one. Nigel Pearson getting sacked, 2 games to go, completely illogical. I mean, I was looking at some of the social media around this, and everybody's pointing the finger at Deeney, saying that he had the influence, and it was the dressing room that had grassed up Pearson, and all hell had broke loose at half time. But everybody seems to deny there was any fisticuffs or anything like that. Listeners out there will probably know more than we do, but the upshot is, even if you fall out with your manager, I'm talking from a chairman owner's point of view, you still think, right, 2 games to go, you're a cunt, you think I'm a cunt, you keep us up, we'll give you $1 million, $2 million, whatever the bonus is, and then you can do one. Or if you get us relegated, you can do one anyway. But you don't just get rid of them, because I was saying in Match Club, you still fancy Watford just from the fact that under Pearson they managed to beat United, Wolves and Liverpool. And with that fixture list, you'd still, you know, they could do something against Manchester City, or they could do something against Arsenal, who would be thinking about the FA Cup final. But now, I mean, we saw what happened. City just, you know, picked them apart, and probably Ben Foster kept the score down.
So I saw Foster's post-match interview, and he just said, our confidence is on the floor.
Yeah.
I mean, they've dispatched a manager who has the highest win ratio in 13 managers that they've had. They have absolutely imploded at the worst possible time. I agree with what you're saying, David. Irrelevant of what you think of Pearson, I mean, he was no different a character to when they got him in. And that's what's dragged them kicking and screaming ultimately. It's played into our hands ultimately.
I mean, I'd said before, you know, we played that. It had almost the air of, you know, last season with all these little strands, all just, you know, the stars aligning. You know, when things like that are happening to your opponents at this time of the season, you just think, hang on a minute, there's something going on here.
And the subtle change between Pearson being sacked and Villa's results against Arsenal was the shifting goal difference. That was as important to me as the points thing, because they got mentally destroyed against Manchester City, and then to have to go home and sit and watch Villa go above them. That's we're winning the mental game now.
Yeah, and just like to thank Manchester City. I mean, we'd all break out into a chorus of Blue Moon, but you couldn't have asked for. I mean, somebody said, what do you want the Manchester City Watford score to be? You'd probably joke, say, 4-0.
And it was a mercy killing in the end. They gave them sympathy. They stopped.
Yeah. And so that actually brings in, we'll talk about it later on, but Bournemouth still alive. If Villa fail to turn up on the last day, it has to be said. Point number two are, they're not really rivals, although I think they like to try to make out they are. Coventry City have announced plans. I think if anybody gave Coventry City a sniff of a chance of a new stadium, they'd be announcing plans, because, you know, the fact that they've had to squat almost at the Trilby Stadium, or whatever it's called.
Well, they had to squat in their own stadium, didn't they?
they did, actually. But they have revealed plans to return. I think it's at the outskirts of Coventry.
Yeah, it's like a joint venture with Warwick Uni, I think.
Yeah, with the University of Warwick. I think it's the southwest edge of the city. The university owns some land there, and I think it's still a long shot, is it not?
Well, in terms of funding, the time frame. There's no funding agreed for it, so I think that it's an ambitious plan, and perhaps the publicity around it is to generate a little bit of a private investment. The only comparison I can think of is Bristol Rovers' ground that was built on the edge of the University of West England's site. But we will see. I mean, it's a long way from being built, and there's some suggestion they could end up back at the Rica.
Yeah, as somebody stated, I think close to the project, said that, you know, you're still looking, if everything goes swimmingly, you're still looking at 2 to 3 years before the earth is cut, as in they start to lay down the foundations for that. Point number three, meanwhile, in LA, a consortium of, I think, 14... former US national women's players, and also actresses Jennifer Garner, Jessica Chastain, America Ferrara, and Natalie Portman, amongst others, plus investors from like media and technology, have got together to propose a women's football team. Those who follow MLS will know that LAFC recently rose out of thin air to be another LA franchise to go along with LA Galaxy, but the women's team haven't actually got a team in LA, and so Natalie Portman, Jessica Chastain, all friends of the show, all friends of mine, have created a consortium called Angel City, which actually would be a good name for the team, actually. But all those women I've mentioned there, I've seen pictures of, I think on Natalie Portman's Instagram about a year ago, her, Jessica Chastain, Jennifer Garner, etc., pitch side at a US women's game. So this has obviously been in the works for a while now, and I know, you know, most of those actresses involved are all about empowering and helping, you know, women's causes, so it should be interesting to see how that project develops henceforth. Any comments from you chaps?
Chris Purdy alive.
Honestly, it's not really a story I know that much about, to be honest with you.
Maybe you can be a mascot. You can hold Natalie Portman's hand as you run onto the pitch.
Firmly.
Firmly.
Yeah, good pun. No, I mean,
oh, dear. I think the firmly comment's wearing thin on Mr. Bud.
Right, anyway, let's move on. First of all, before we get into our match against Henry Lansbury's Arsenal, thank you very much to the My Old Man Said patrons, as always, for keeping the show on the road. And most of all, thanks everybody who turned up in Match Club by being a My Old Man Said patron. One of the benefits is you have an access all areas pass to Match Club. And we had our second post 1 a.m. Gathering after the Arsenal game.
Overwhelmed by numbers, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's amazing that, you know, I don't think people work anymore, Dan. They seem to be... They'd be able to stay up all hours.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, we heard it all last night, didn't we? That we heard about, yeah. I mean, someone almost suffered suffered a gentleman's explosion during the Trezeguet goal.
Yeah, but we can't talk about Match Club. No, the first and second rule of Match Club. But if you do become a My Old Man Said patron, or actually if you rejoin as a My Old Man Said patron, having been in the wilderness, and you were a BMC before Match Club, I'm sure you will enjoy Match Club, especially on the last day. I mean, Manchester United won Match Club. That went on to like 1:30 in the morning. Everton one was pretty tense, but the Arsenal one was finally, we were getting some joy, because it's been hard the initial few weeks of Match Club, because obviously Villa weren't really delivering much. So it was really therapy at the end of the day. But now it's almost like it was born for this moment.
Yeah, everyone's got their, they've come out fighting now.
We can't talk about it, but it's a show where it's real joining in. It's not this like sending questions or whatever and engagement. It's like we're all one. It's a fluid, beautiful beast. Just want to say thank you for this week to Lewis Gordon, Richard Schultz, Andy Ryder, Tam Pax and Daryl Barber for joining up as patrons, and also a big thank you to David Waldron for upgrading as well. Welcome aboard.
Hang on, someone's called Tam Pax.
I haven't edited it this week, yeah, and it's took me aback that I thought, did I edit it?
This is somebody who obviously knows the show well and knows
what, get it, yeah.
And knows what this shout out section is. Maybe it's
Gorilla.
It's Dan Rogers.
It's a pseudonym.
So obviously a fan of the show who knows it all too well. Welcome, Mr. Pax.
Or
Miss Pax. Right, anyway, but if you want to sign up and join us in Match Club for the Survival Sunday, as we're calling it, do go to the My Old Man Said website and check on the Patreon link, and more details will be found there. Right, let's get on to the main topic, which... I jokingly referred it as Henry Lansbury's Arsenal, mainly, you know, it's Frank Lampard's Chelsea, and a bit of a tenuous link. Henry Lansbury started there, never kind of made the grade there. But what we did find ourselves up against, Dean Smith's Aston Villa found themselves up against Steve Round's Arsenal engine.
Hmm.
Remember Steve Round, ex-director of football, who was trying to build the Villa engine but just ran out of parts?
And fuel.
And now he's ended up as one of Arteta's assistant coaches.
Yeah, he was doing like lengths of the touchline with his iPad, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, he loves stats and all that kind of stuff.
That Trezeguet looks good. Ooh.
Anyway, in the context of this game, as we all well know, was we haven't beaten Arsenal at Villa Park since December 1998 under John Gregory. The whole Santa Claus parachuting accident, etc. This was 17 home games ago.
Wow.
And a few absolute maulings in the process.
Oof, definitely.
We used to get mauled by Arsenal even back in the day, mm-hmm. like in the 80s mm-hmm. and stuff. It's kind of a weird bogey team. I remember they beat us, was it 6-2 or something? Woodcock scored 5 goals or something ridiculous. Tony Woodcock.
There was a few times, even like in the early mid-90s, I remember them coming and beating us 4 at Villa Park with Ian Wright. And
I remember that wasn't when he ran from the halfway line, didn't he? And they were dreadful that year.
Yeah.
So, long story short, when you've got to win your last two games to stay up, the last team you would pick, actually, would be bloody Arsenal at Villa Park. You'd even have them at the Emirates over playing them at Villa Park. But anyway, so stiff task ahead, but... Dean Smith blossomed, did he not? So, I mean, tactically astute. I think he changed the team about two or three times.
Yeah, it was at least three times.
In game, yeah. I mean, what was, in terms of those shifts, what were the ones that stood out?
Well, the obvious one, I suppose, was a forced one with Gilbert, that he appeared not having looked like he'd been away for 5 months. It was, I mean, he gave us energy. There was clear passion. And I mean, it's been circulating a lot. As a clip, but that great tackle he made in the second half. But I thought it changed a whole dynamism of it. The other things for me...
Just to interject there, while we're on Gilbert, he did hit the ground running. And when we're talking about other players, like, oh yeah, you need your 6-7 games to get up to speed. And it's easy to find the football cliche excuses, because we were worried. Is the reason why he's been frozen out of the picture, so to speak, was, you know, there was talk that he had some COVID complications and he had to stay back in France. There was injury concerns. And he was as fresh as a daisy, wasn't he? And up for the fight.
He was well up for it. And I thought it changed our whole approach on the right-hand side. It gave Arsenal something to think about. I thought it complemented really. I thought how Luis plays is he immediately had someone who was available to take a pass to his right. I thought a lot of things changed in game that were really, really positive. Grealish was further up the pitch and willing to run at the defence. Hourihan was very, very dangerous from set plays, and I think playing on the front foot. And McGinn probably had his best game since returning from injury as well.
When I was talking about Smith, he was actually making formation changes, was he not? And McGinn was kind of central to that.
Yeah, so obviously Arsenal play with a back three, but they play very a wide setup. Villa were a little bit more narrow with the front three and three in midfield. And for the first sort of 20 minutes, we were getting outnumbered every time, and Arsenal would overload on either fullback. If we could see it on the telly, I'm sure Smith knew. And he changed it quite quickly to a 4-1-4-1. He slotted the wide guys in a little bit tighter, and then he put Luiz in front of the back four and behind the midfield just to sweep up, essentially. And it worked really well. And then he changed it slightly in the second half with pushing McGinn almost into like a 4-4-2 or a 4-4-1-1, and just to get someone closer to Samatta.
Yeah.
And he just got McGinn sort of just pressuring the back four a little bit and just giving them something to think about and pressing from the front, basically, because we basically played a low block. But you do need someone to kind of be like the windscreen wipers at the front as well to kind of just help.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just so easy for them and they're always going to have an out ball. And that was the thing, as Dan mentioned, with Gilbert, he gives you the out ball. Because he can carry the ball, and I mentioned it a few times that there were various occasions during the game where you would hear Smith on the touchline when a Villa player would get the ball, and he'd simply scream, "Travel, just get up the fucking field," because it just gives you something.
Grealish.
Yeah, a few times. Yeah, it just gives you somewhere to build from. And I've semi-jokingly called it like setting up base camp, but I hate that phrase. I'm going to keep saying it.
I'm going to say it just to wind you up now.
Dan's going to put it on a T-shirt now. But it's getting yourselves into a position where you can start to hurt the opposition. You know, if Jack's dropping out into his, you know, taking the ball off the centre-halves, that's just not going to, no good for us, especially when you know that Luiz can do that role more than well.
I'll tell you someone who did set up base camp.
Don't say that phrase. I hate it.
How do we feel about Samatta's performance?
Willing, but ineffective.
Let's just finish on Smith. I thought, as Chris was explaining, he nullified Arsenal very well with that switch. And, you know, you only have to look at the main headline stats that they didn't have one shot on target.
No, and considering you got, like, you know, Aubameyang and Lacazette, these are two truly world-class strikers who didn't get a sniffle game.
Well, he's got the most goals in over the last two seasons in the Premier League.
And I mean, we mentioned, obviously, how Villa set up, but I kind of expected Arsenal to be a little bit leggy. They made six changes, but it showed why they're 10th compared to the teams they aspire to be, because I don't think Arsenal aren't good enough at the moment to make six changes and be a strong side. Their first choice 11, which I think will be more the team that probably plays against Watford and will be pushing for places for the cup final, is a strong team. But when they drop people out, I think they lack a little bit of energy. I'd said before the game that I thought Villa having sort of 4 days recovery time and Arsenal only having two after a really, really intense game against City. And, it kind of had a bit of after the Lord Mayor's show written all over it from their point of view. Some of Arsenal's best performances recently have been when they've been able to counter-attack teams. And, when Villa kind of, as I said, they set up a low block and just said to Arsenal, well, okay, you can have the ball at the back and we'll press you when you come over the halfway line.
Yeah, because I think you might remember me saying in Match Club that I wasn't too bothered about the initial exchanges in the game. It was quite boring and a tepid affair, and nobody was, getting out the traps fast. The shackles went off, and I thought that kind of suits Villa. Just kind of grind them down a little bit.
Yeah, just ease into the game as well and try and just see what Arsenal's rhythm is, and then we'll counter it rather than saying, we're going to do our thing and then potentially burning yourself out after, by the first drinks break.
Yeah, we didn't need to be so desperate, even though a lot was on the line. We could feel our way into it and then release the wrath of the Egyptian god.
From yet another Horahan set piece. What is it now? Five assists in four games he's been involved in now. It's brilliant.
Horahan's been very, very effective, hasn't he?
Yeah. And as everybody's said, and you see it online and pundits, etc., say that while he'll drift in and out of games, when he's on the field, he can and usually does make something happen.
He always has done. The thing was, what was levelled against him was we become a bit lighter defensively in the midfield. But the way we contain Arsenal there, Smith's obviously worked out how to, and Horahan started the last couple of games. He's circumnavigated it because we've got two clean sheets out of the last three games, and arguably should have had three out of three. So that shows you how.
And it wasn't a physical game either. That it was it was the kind of game that obviously suits Horahan. And I think just to have someone who, though not perfect, is clearly our best dead ball specialist, and his crosses. I mean, the fact that, as Chris just said, that five assists in, that is a season saving contribution. There's no doubt about it really now. I mean, obviously Trezeguet's goal, his finish was fantastic. And I've said a couple of times now that the sound of leather and football coming together as that smashed into the back of the net was up there, really.
Although nowadays it's plastic on plastic, isn't it?
Yeah, single-use plastic on single-use plastic. but it was very, very satisfying. And Trezeguet, again, even in that half, he'd already done a few things that were incredibly frustrating. That's how I'll describe it. He's contributed. He had a lot to do when that ball dropped and he lashed it home. That's a superb finish, as good as you'll see.
As I was joking on social media, he seems to absorb criticism and slagging off and recycle it into goals.
Yeah, it's remarkable, really. He's the most likable, hateable player.
Yeah, he is.
I think that I don't dislike him at all, really, but his work rate is fantastic. And
I think that's what Smith likes, isn't it? He's a very willing player. Well, the end product isn't quite there. You can see he's growing in confidence, and he puts himself out there. He puts himself into positions where he can make things happen, and you can't really argue with that.
No, not at all, not at all. And we've had plenty of midfielders who contributed nothing.
Considering so many of our so-called strikers haven't been in these positions, obviously Davis got into his position when he came on. You think any striker worth their salt at this level is burying that?
We don't buy strikers to score, Chris. That's so old school.
It's just a distraction. It's a diversion.
You know, we've seen like France and Spain win a World Cup without a proper striker. I mean, France had a striker, but it was a bit, I think it was 98, but he was a tenuous player. I mean, he wasn't doing anything. And then Spain obviously just got rid of the striker, and Villa this season played without a striker as well. So yeah, they are overrated in B6 nowadays. Mm-hmm.
Can we class them as the false nine, or are they just the invisible nine?
A few seasons ago, we started off the season without a number nine. Nobody had the number nine. I think Scott Sinclair came in and took the number, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, I just saw that as an example of the state of our football club at the time, that you would start the season without a number nine, like the most iconic number in the game.
Was that because Benteke was wearing 20, though?
Well, no, you should have a bloody number nine striker, shouldn't you?
Why didn't he want the shirt, I wonder?
Superstition, blah, blah, blah. But if that number nine shirt's available, you take it. But yeah, it's a bizarre one that we would start a season without that number nine. But anyway, we digress. We have sent forwards now, but they're just there in spirit rather than in terms of contribution.
I mean, what I'll say about Davis is that at least he's getting into the positions. This isn't like he's, you know, because Samatta, you think he's not even getting in front of goal.
Yeah, I mean, the Davis wouldn't...
It was a great move.
He did the hard part. Yeah. I mean, it was a great Grealish...
Great break, yeah.
Great break. And then that was the test where he was... And we've seen this in under-23 level when we've been to these games. And I've mentioned it a couple of podcasts ago when old Hepburn Murphy was put through. And he was ahead of... I think it was the Celtic centre-back. This is under-23 level. And you thought, right, let's see how fast he is.
Yeah, I remember this.
And the under-23 Celtic centre-back ate up the space between them, outrun him, and just took the ball off him. And he was actually clean through. And he just thought, actually, he hasn't got lightning speed. He's not going to make it. And I knew in this moment, Davis, 50-50 with the old Arsenal player, and he shrugged him off and he was through. And he thought, right, even if he doesn't score, you think there's potential here, because this guy didn't give a fuck. He just shrugged that guy off like a rag doll.
Yeah.
So he's just got to work on his finishing. And I mean, I was saying in Match Club that it should come naturally in terms of being a predator and wanting to score. Just waking up in the morning, all you want to do is score. And I don't mean in that way. I mean on the football
We're
pitch.
Not all Chris Budd.
I'm not talking about morning wood. But I think he lacks that. He doesn't seem to be nasty enough. He hasn't got that predatory arrogance, or, you know, he hasn't got any of those the facets that you associate with strikers, whether it's arrogance,
I wonder,
or
if he's confident,
shithousery.
Yeah, I think Chris is right. Yeah,
he's almost too nice,
because he's out. You know, his overall game outside of the penalty area, in terms of his hold up play and him being a genuine outlet, he's fantastic, and he's such a willing runner, and he can really bully, you know, the opposition against most centre backs. You just wish if he could put a few goals into his game, he wouldn't necessarily have to be like a 20, 30 goals a season striker. To be
effective. If you can get to, like, you know, 12, 13, that would do it.
Yeah, I think so. And I said in the last podcast or the one before that there are some cliches that are bandied around about players like Davis, and he's actually a technically very good footballer.
Yeah.
I think on the ground's great.
It's excellent, and his hold-up playing, and he has a knack of, when he does hold the ball up, he just buys a second where if someone's catching up with him, he can play it off, and he's very, very tidy. I do think that the chances like the one he had against Arsenal are the acid test for whether you're going to cut it at the top, top level. And I mean Premier League, really.
Yeah, it's like if he gets another one of those, you want to see him put it away.
Well, it's the difference where we'll get to them hitting the post in a minute, but it's the difference between feeling, putting that comfort, that buffer zone between you, because that was a golden opportunity. It's also the kind of opportunity that when other teams get those chances against us, they take them. And
like I said, if he's getting 12, let's say 12, then that means you're picking up points there because of those goals, and it turns you from a team fighting relegation to suddenly a team that's at least mid-table.
Yeah, I think so. My optimism for Davis is offset by real concern for Samatta, though, because I am struggling to see what attributes he brings if it's not, because it doesn't appear to be goals.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at the stats, for example, I mean, he won six aerials, which is four more than any other Villa player. And six is doesn't really mean anything to anybody, but it's normally, let's say it's a good stat. But I can't remember him, you know, winning anything. I don't know where. No. I think he was getting some knock-ons, but if you're an Arsenal defender, you don't feel the threat.
No. And I when I was pondering this team selection, because I think there was a few head-scratching about why he was opted to start, but I do think this comes to a tactical thing on the subject of Smith, really, that it's better to introduce Davis later on than, I think, have Samatta on the bench, because I think you get some impact out of Davis. And
yeah,
I think we're hoping for something from Samatta that we're not seeing in match at the moment.
No, I think if Davis had goals in him, he would be starting without a doubt.
Yeah, I agree.
And then Samatta would be only brought on for that extra forward. So you're playing two up front rather than a like for like swap.
Yeah, I agree.
Other outstanding performances. I mean, there was a lot of good performances, but I thought Konsa had one of his better performances, and even got Mings out of jail that one time when Mings seemed to miss kick it.
I thought the back four in general played well.
Yeah,
they held. Yeah, they held Arsenal. Reasonably at arm's length. It was a really good sort of defensive unit, as it were. And that's something we've sort of thrown at Villa through the season, is they haven't defended as a unit, as a team. It's always been Mings getting them out of trouble, and it's been, you know, these like heroic blocks and stuff.
The big difference in terms of that unit is how Luiz is covering and reading the game and getting around and being very mobile in front of that back four. And that's, it's almost like, you know, when you come up with that cliche, the goalkeeper gives you confidence, gives the back four confidence, and, you know, the vice versa, but it's almost like they've got a goalkeeper in front of them now who gives them extra confidence because they know he's going to be there to help out and cover.
I mean, credit to Smith there, because apparently our expected goals a game was over two before the lockdown, and now it's under one.
That is major progress.
Which is major progress.
Hmm.
That's conceding, is it?
Yes, yeah, expected goals conceded, yeah.
And Luiz has contributed massively to that his level of composure, his range of passing, his determination.
And his savviness as well.
Really, really, really good. And you don't want to over-talk or talk up a player too much, but we really are starting to see the top qualities that he's got that made it such a pain, I think, for Man City to lose him.
But it's a night and day difference from how we viewed him before the lockdown, because we were looking at somebody who's maybe not at the pace of the Premier League. He was a little casual at times, you know, didn't really see the man on because he expected a bit more time.
He doesn't waste anything now. It's as you say, night and day, isn't it?
And he can get himself out of cul-de-sacs and trouble. And
I like that he's got that sort of little bit of shit house about him, that he will get a booking by about 75 minutes for persistent niggly fouls. He will break the game up if he has to.
This is one of the I mean, we have to stay up, obviously, to keep most of these players and build onwards. But you start to see the potential here of, you know, Luiz and Grealish with another 10 games between them developing an understanding. Davis and Grealish developing more of an understanding. They've obviously played through the youth ranks, but Davis is a, you know, different beast now. He's somebody who, the way he plays, would only benefit playing with Grealish. So, you know, Grealish disappears now. It's kind of, okay, that's a bit of a false start there, because we were developing something that potentially could be, all you've got to do is add a bit of extra quality on the wide midfield and then get a decent striker, and you've suddenly got a different dynamic altogether, because your defence has suddenly found its feet. And you've starting to, Louise with McGinn, and you've suddenly got a midfield that's starting to look a bit better. But hey ho.
Do we want to talk about how all of our hearts stopped when the ball hit the post?
Just stop them thinking about it again.
Well, I thought it was a goal.
I was convinced it was a goal.
It should have been, really. You know, if the guy makes contact, he should score.
It was almost like somebody said, right, here's the script. You know how it goes. And you're like, yeah, fair enough, it's a goal.
I thought they brought Theo Walcott on. Because the way it just played out in exactly the same way.
Walcott's Arsenal.
Theo Walcott's Arsenal, yes. I mean, I described in Match Club, you probably would have heard my screams wherever you were in the world as the ball not only ricocheted back, but Rainer did his best circus juggling act before somehow lying on the ball. I would have kissed the ball. I'd have kissed Rainer if I'd have been there. And the collective relief on the faces of the Villa players.
Yeah, and especially Gilbert, who was blowing his cheeks out as he was running away.
But that's the thing, isn't it? When you put in a performance like Villa did, you almost deserve those little lucky breaks. Whereas so many times this season, Villa haven't done enough to earn the lucky breaks.
No, absolutely.
And to be honest, they weren't holding on like desperados, were they? They were still creating enough up top to...
No, I mean, it was nervy.
Keep them honest.
Yeah, it was nervy and horrible experience because we knew what it meant. But it wasn't like Arsenal were peppering the goal.
No, no, you're right, yeah.
I mean, you know, granted, they didn't have that much motivation to set about us. A lot of people talking about Grealish's last game, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that's, as I said before the game on, I think, on Twitter, I said, this is all about Villa surviving. I mean, it doesn't really matter about Grealish's future. That can be spoken about when the final whistle goes against West Ham.
Yeah, he needs to secure the future of his club first, and that means going to West Ham. Well, first it was getting, you know, playing well against Arsenal. Now he has to play even better against West Ham, if he can.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's playing as part of a team to keep the club up.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And I thought he should have straight batted that interview with Sky at the end of it, because he, just by his kind of his emotions and response, he, you know, cat out the bag, and really should be telling Sky to get the fuck out of there, asking questions when the predicament is, well, hang on a minute, there's still a game to go of Aston Villa season, so, you know, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, it's certainly a bit of a cheeky question to throw that in at the end of the game, but you knew they were gonna.
Yeah, it's because they don't, you know, actually care about the football side of things. No, of course they just want the headlines.
That's a very good point, and in it immediately changed the narrative from a vital win, and they'll go heavy on the marketing for Survival Sunday. But actually, that's fed a load of clickbait bollocks today, and in the days that follow on a story that pretty much everyone knows all the detail of already.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote one story about Grealish and Man United, basically saying this is why this story keeps getting repeated, because Manchester United have got a massive fan base around the world, and all these outlets and newspapers just need to feed them, because they know they're there for the taking. They just have to come up with a story, and nobody's advanced this story. And it's been the same old shit.
Well, Solskjaer's even said, he's been quoted in his press conferences as saying that hasn't been a conversation that they've even had.
Yeah, so it's almost like it's been willed into existence. Regardless if it's true or not, it's been going on for so long. And Sky, you know, Sky are also, you know, the Murdoch, they own TalkSport, they own all these newspapers, so they are creating content for themselves to make more money from. This is how it's all set up. It's not by chance they ask questions like that.
And I'll end the Grealish bit from my point of view on the one elephant in the room, is that if we stay up, I think that our owners have got an opportunity to, Grealish's ambition aside, I think if it's a matter of money, I don't think that's what it really is. But I think if Villa have got a genuine ambition to build a football team around him and around a core group of players, we may have that opportunity. I'm not going to say it's easy. I'm not going to say that his head hasn't been turned by trophies or the prospect of them. But it's not in the narrative, and I don't think it's off the table completely at this point.
It's, you know, it's hard to what you kind of want to say and what you don't want to say. But in the theory of regardless of if Grealish is signed to go anywhere, this was always going to be a transition season. So if Grealish, for example, if you're a footballer, you might as well have gone last season rather than, oh, well, I'll do a season in the Premier League with exactly. Villa, what are you trying to achieve? Because it's always going to be a transition season. You know, Dean Smith himself mapped that out and said it's going to be difficult this year, but our second season there'll be a big kick on. And we're in a situation where you know it's night and day. The differences of where Villa's future is in the next 5 years depends on Sunday. If we win, then that transition season kicks in. We've done exactly what Leicester did, and we're going to win the league next season. but you know, a variation on that theme, you kick on and suddenly people see, oh, you're not just a yo-yo club, so I might want to sign for you now.
Yeah, exactly.
They actually believe, I mean, what we've been telling players to sign in the last few years, we've just been making empty promises. We first of all, we say, oh, we won the European Cup. Here's the trophy. Have a look at that. You fancy playing for us? And then we say, oh, yeah, big plans, big owners. Oh, yeah. And there's nothing really tangible there, but at least if we stay up, then all right, we're in the Premier League for good now. And it was always going to be a difficult first season. So there's not that many teams really kicking on at the moment, apart from Liverpool and Manchester City. They're the established teams. So if he goes to one of them, fair enough. You know, he might be, I don't think he'd be starting every game. But any other team, Villa, if the owners are for real, have a chance, if they're savvy in who they buy, to, let's say, up the ante a bit more. They won't be that, if they really get their shit together, they won't be that far behind your Arsenals, your Manchester Uniteds, in terms of they're both teams in transition. So you could be in a position like a Leicester if it all clicks. And you can, and you start to see it starting to click now. We're much harder to break down and we're not as sloppy and stupid as before. And we always said we were in games for most of the season. We were just finding our feet.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that there's subtler examples as well, that there's different models at play. And look at the top half of the table. Look at how Wolves have constructed. Look at how, you know, it's not the kind of football I want to go for, but in terms of personnel, Burnley are hardly... Yeah. You know, that's not Hollywood football right there. And Sheffield United, I know that they faded post-lockdown, but they've stuck to a very, very clear plan and strategy that works. And I think a big part of this is I don't really buy into the notion that we got promoted early. I think we got promoted and we sort of had to deal with that. I do buy into the notion that we had so much change in terms of personnel that and our attractiveness as a football club was lower.
Yeah, there's no bad time to get promoted. I mean, you could say to Leeds fans, hey, I think you got promoted a bit late.
Yeah.
You're no shit.
I mean, I think Smith said it, didn't he? If you're going to be rebuilding, you want to be rebuilding in the Premier League. You don't want to be rebuilding the Championship.
Exactly.
No. Like the calibre of player you can attract, that's not a rebuild in the Championship.
And also you're buying players that you might have to offload straight away if you get promoted, because there's no continuity. No. Obviously, one or two will be good enough. But exactly. And this is, you know, there's for some football fans, they hear something and then they parrot it, but it's actually not common sense. And so you hear, you know, first of all, yeah, we should, you know, when we were fighting relegation, oh, we need to go down and rebuild in the Championship. It's like, no, you just got to get the right manager and the right team and the right ethos and rebuild in the fucking Premier League, because you'll find it a lot easier to attract better players.
And that's what makes Sunday so important, is that we've by some miracle, some good fortune, and by finally getting it together and being determined on the pitch and actually playing to a frigging game plan, that it's pretty much in our hands now. We just need to get through 90 minutes to in a similar vein as to how we performed against Arsenal, actually, that we need a pretty agile, clever in-game plan to respond to a West Ham team that looks transformed, really, from even the early part of the post-lockdown. And for all of the things that we've been saying, those are just some of the headlines. There are getting relegated would be an absolute disaster from this for this football club. And even 2 or 3 weeks ago, it looked inevitable to be in a position where we're 90 minutes away from making a huge stride forward into cementing ourselves into the Premier League, not just for this season, but for, you know, on a 5-year plan, call it. That's must win.
And the bottom line is, if we stay up, Grealish or no Grealish, we will improve next season without a doubt. If we go down, then oh shit, here we go again. We're back into Hades, trying to dig ourselves out of
hell. Well, we've
said
it numerous times, you know. We are now finally right at the point of the crossroads. It's which way do you want to go now?
You've got some self-determination that you get relegated and you can, you know, I can't sit here and pontificate whether Jack Grealish will stay. Of course he'll go, but so will many of the core other players and actually fringe players who we might not even bring up in discussion. They'll be off. Staying up and it allows us to, as I say, make our own choices. And one final thing that I said in Match Club yesterday is that we don't need to be sentimental. If we lose Grealish, we lose Grealish. You know, that makes us no difference to any other football team. And Villa have been harvested for their best players throughout all of the modern era.
And best players that have actually, I mean, when you've got like David Platt, for example, who scored over 20 goals in consecutive seasons from midfield and then also was a top man for England. When you lose him, and he, you know, he helped us get a promotion, so that matches up with Grealish. And then everything else he's done is way, way beyond what Grealish has ever, you know, he hasn't had a chance to even, you know, try to achieve that yet. But when you lose a player like that as a team, then you think, shit, that's having the heart ripped out of the team.
Exactly.
And we went on and spent that money from Platt and built, within a couple of years, we were challenging for the league title again and then won a cup the very next season. And so that, you could argue, was an improvement of on that Villa team that had Platt in it.
I mean, and that in its, for anybody who has seen the film, that is the fundamental message behind Moneyball. You know, the Oakland A's came up with the Moneyball thing because they had their three best players go to, like, you know, the Red Sox, the Yankees and someone else. Yeah. They had that money. It's, well, how do you replace these guys in the aggregate? We can't just replace a like-for-like player. Like, I don't see Villa, for example, I mean, they won't get the kind of money, but we aren't going to go out and buy an £80 million midfielder on 100 grand a week plus, I don't think. We're just not.
We'll buy one from, we'll do the John Gregory approach and buy a 6 million Croatian midfielder.
Wait, why not get two?
No disrespect to Croatia, because actually your football players are generally more technically gifted.
Or we'll go
than
to
ours.
Crew Alexandra and get ourselves a nice midfielder again.
Yeah, well, it worked
but,
for Platt.
But it's about, you know, building a team, building a squad, building a club and a sustainable system. And that's what the owners, who seem to have said all the right things in that sense in terms of things like the academy, that's what they know they need to build. They can't just be and you see some fans moaning about, you know, as soon as we got the result on Tuesday night against Arsenal, it was right, who are we going to buy now if we stay up? And it's like, hang on a minute, like, the first thing is make good with what you've got and then add to it. Don't the default setting can't always be, oh, we've lost a couple of games, fuck it, let's sack the manager, or oh, we're not doing very well, sack the board, we need a new owner. Or it's like, you can't churn.
It's the level of, there's a certain level of football fan, which is social media fueled and very knee jerk reactive. And, you know, you don't run football clubs by that mentality.
No, not successful ones.
I mean, that's how Watford seemed to be running the show. Anyway, so it's all on Survival Sunday. Just quickly, before we go into underrated and overrated, quick permutations. Bournemouth still in play against Everton. If they win, then we need a point at least to get them off our backs. Because if we lost, then they would be above us if they win. And then in terms of Watford, they need to better our result and then they'll be above us.
Are you guys confident?
The silence.
Funny enough, I was more quietly confident in terms of beating Arsenal.
Same.
And being in the rat race at the end. But West Ham, it's one of those, my crystal ball is cloudy and it could be win, lose and draw. You know, you wouldn't be surprised with any of those permutations.
I've written on my blog tonight that Villa most definitely should come with a health warning, and I think that Sunday could be a prime example of that across 90 God. Minutes. It's foretold following this football club.
Because the other side of the story is, are Watford and Bournemouth really going to continue to self-destruct their way into the championship? because, I mean, they've surprised me already by how they've fallen at certain fences. And then, you know, Bournemouth, and this is adds to the point, Bournemouth come out of nowhere and hammer Leicester 4-1. So unpredictable is the nature of both of those. They're both capable on their day. I mean, you start to think, oh, if only we didn't gift Bournemouth 6 points this season, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So you have to ask yourself, what are Everton doing? Because I thought Everton that played us, you think, well, if Bournemouth really want 3 points, they could probably get them. But then, or you know, Everton go and beat Sheffield United. And, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd have thought Sheffield United would have won that, you know, even playing at 50%. So the factor is, what kind of Everton are turning up on that day? And I think because it's Ancelotti and he'll want something from his players, and he's trying to win the fans over, even though they're not going to be at Goodison, he'll still be busting asses to get something from that game. So that's the plus for that game. In terms of Watford, it's all about what Arteta and Steve Rowan's Arsenal engine are thinking about in terms of the FA Cup and how many players they're going to rest against Watford. Do they want some kind of reaction to spark some momentum going into that game against Chelsea in the FA Cup?
I think Arsenal players have got to try and stake a claim, haven't they? I mean, the ones that came in against Villa clearly didn't, but you know, the manager will clearly be hoping that, well, you've got to give me a selection decision here, otherwise the team that turned over City will get the shirt.
So do you think he would go, right, those five guys, I'm going to give them an extra week's rest, so they got 2 weeks rest, so they're super fresh, but sometimes that plays against you.
Yeah.
Or will he play the team that he intends to play in the final, and because they'll have a week off?
It'll probably be somewhere in between, if truth be told. I'd imagine he'll use his main men. And of course, because you can make five subs, he'll have them in the squad anyway. I mean, you look at what they brought off the bench against Villa.
Yeah.
It was still some very good players.
But then you're looking at, for positives for Villa, you're thinking, Arsenal's attitude might not be there. But you look at the way that Manchester City could set about Watford, and Watford seemed to be, in terms of organisation, in disarray. And Arsenal are, you know, a footballing team, and those some of the players they've got, if they smell blood, then yeah, that's when they kick into gear. And that could be if they get an early goal, Watford have to then come out, then I think it'll be curtains for Watford.
I tend to agree. I mean, Arsenal, traditionally, if you open yourselves up to them, they can be, I mean, they're incredible to watch on a good day, aren't they, Arsenal? So, and potentially the fact that West Ham deservedly went to Old Trafford and got a result, secured their safety, it might be that, you know what, you might just lose the intensity, although they do look a very well-drilled side at the moment.
Yeah. Against Arsenal, as I mentioned, our best policy was to dampen that game in the early stages initially. Watford, no, they've got to better our result. So if we go ahead against West Ham and the news trickles through the transistor radio on the bench of Watford, they'll know they'll have to open up, and that's when Arsenal get dangerous.
This is one of those days, or will be one of those days, where you think this is where the lack of fans will be potentially its most apparent.
Yeah, West Ham, just very quickly, I always looked at that game where people are going, oh yeah, we'll just go and beat West Ham on the last day as long as we're in, you know, in the race. And I see West Ham as a difficult team for Villa to beat. It's as they say in boxing, styles make fights. And we showed when we were playing 10 men of West Ham that we really struggled still to get through them. Even though they didn't really threaten us, when you've seen them in the restart, they've been possibly one of the most improved teams within what they were doing before the restart.
Yeah, and I think there's a risk that we can underestimate that. I don't get that feeling from Smith or the Villa team, really. And no, I think the last couple of weeks, I think that we've got it. You could see that from the reactions at Everton and, you know, some of the reactions against Arsenal. For me, West Ham are, in terms of West Ham needing to win, we're obviously playing them at the best time. It'd be speculation to know what that will count for. Watford have got, I think we've won the mental game there, and unless that there's some sort of regrouping within that squad pretty quickly, I think again that's in our favour. And I think to use your phrase, David, around the trickling down, that Bournemouth hold the Joker card, perhaps, that they could, you know, by some collapse of both of us, sneak in. But I do wonder that if we can go, I use the word, with a strategy, to West Ham. And over 90 minutes, I think we've got enough, having seen us beat Arsenal, to do the same kind of job. I have been impressed with West Ham, but I hope that their lack of motivation could be in our favour now.
Yeah, they swept Watford away. I mean, I will, if you want me to make a prediction, I will say exactly what Chris Budd said before the opening credits when he was on the wireless, where he said he would do it by 1 point. And I can see Watford flunking it and Bournemouth winning, and ourselves getting a draw in a drab game against West Ham, but it being on a knife's edge and West Ham maybe hitting the post, Rayner comes off his head.
Then skips it bounces off his head.
Then it bounces off the post or something.
Oh, great.
But yeah, I think that 1 point when Chris Budd firmly said that. It did resonate.
As I predicted before, I'm confident we can go to West Ham and get a positive result. Whether that's a win or not, it's, as you said, you know, the crystal ball is cloudy. Watford, personally, I just don't see it. It wouldn't even surprise me if all three sides got a draw. But if Arsenal turn up and they are professional and they are up for it, and looking ahead to the cup final, then they should surely have too much for them.
Yeah,
I think Watford will lose, Bournemouth will win, and we'll win.
I'll have that. And then we can all look forward to a nice 5-6 week break.
Yeah.
No, the season starts the Tuesday.
Yeah.
We can start trolling Leeds fans.
Away to Leeds.
Right, shall we get on to the old under and overrated?
I think we should.
Right, underrated or overrated? Here we go. This is where we look back in Villa folklore and history and reappraise certain players that have crossed our paths. Right, up this episode, we have the double delight of Mr. Mark Delaney and the, how do we describe him? Mercurial, the lifestyle.
Feckless.
Absolute arsehole.
Why? You've never met him. How can you judge somebody that you've never met?
Didn't Chris go out for dinner with him?
it was him in a blonde wig, wasn't it? Mr. Charles Nzogbia. Let's start with the Delaney, because it's a bit more... we've got to warm up to Nzogbia, I feel. Mark Delaney, why did we buy him?
Is this a John Gregory signing?
Yeah.
Hmm.
A John Gregory bargain?
We couldn't get a Croatian equivalent from...
20 grand.
You haven't got a brother, Bosco?
Yeah. do not be disheartened by our tones. Mark Delaney is very well regarded in his position, actually. I think a lot, you know, a few people voting him for the greatest team of all time thing that Villa are doing.
What?
I mean, a lot of that says a lot about
the right
our right back.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at the list you've compiled, David. Yeah, maybe he is the greatest.
our right back situation over decades, in fact.
I mean, there were some decades we just didn't pick a right back. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
What, Rio Coca?
That's why Brian Little went three at the back.
Carlos Cuellar.
Oh.
Yeah, so I ask you, gentlemen, why did we buy him? What's the context?
Well, he was born. He was born once. He's been reborn.
I don't want the whole story.
Doug
I just
Ellis
want
gave
my...
birth to him.
Yeah, we bought him at a time when Gary Charles was kind of coming to the end of his sort of tenure at Villa Park. And Steve Watson had kind of come in.
Steve Watson.
So I'd imagine that Delaney would have been brought as backup.
Yeah.
But by the start of the next season, he'd kind of got the shirt from Steve Watson.
Not hard.
It was literally his shirt.
That's who we should have done. We should have done Steve Watson in
That's
this.
That's next time, kids.
We'll do a Geordie special.
Yes.
And that was it. Well, there you go. Overrated or underrated?
My memory of him is being...
His fondness for Delaney, is that something that's kind of developed with time? Because he was a bit of... was he a bit beige as a player? Yeah. Or?
Just unfashionable, because he was just so sort of functional and consistent, but he was never like a...
Functional is a very good word, I think, for Delaney.
A trendy, you know, he was sort of coming through that era when you were starting to get these like marauding fullbacks, and he'd give it a go, but he was more
beige.
Defensively solid. You know, he loved a tackle, and if anything, that's probably what cost his career in the end, that he just was so physically committed, he just trashed his knee, didn't he, I think?
Yeah, all I remember of Delaney, really, was he had these sideburns, which kind of seemed to be a bit longer than his hairstyle really, you know, that didn't really go with his hair.
It was a little bit fancy dress sort of hair stuck onto the side of his face, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a bit kind of Elvis impression.
He was a player that had come up through like the Welsh League, hadn't he? I think he'd started at United
as a
kid.
Yeah,
ended up sort of having to go right to the bottom of the footballing pyramid.
Yeah.
And slowly worked his way back up. I think he'd obviously worked his way up to Cardiff, which would have been a big step from the League of Wales, and then to get a Premier League move to at a time like, you know, a team like Villa, who at the time were a regular top six side, would be considered a bit of a bargain.
And, you know, he almost got to 200 appearances, which during those kind of times, there was lots of ins and outs through the revolving door. And, you know, he's a proper Villa man at the end of the day, and obviously still with us.
He kept Najwan Giri about the team as well.
Yeah, he just made the most of what he had, I think. You know, really professional, you know, really sort of reliable player, which I know Gregory liked those kind of players. We were very much like a bit of a workhorse team.
I remember he was on the end of a terrible tackle at Fulham from, was it Bottenegra?
I think so. And it's certainly towards the end of his Villa career. Yeah. He just got absolutely nailed with injuries, didn't he? Through that sort of O'Leary era, he was very seldom in the team. And obviously by the time O'Neill came, I think he knew it was probably curtains once, you know, O'Neill started splashing the Lerner cash.
Yeah.
You know, bringing in such superstars as Habib Bey and Luke Young.
Well, he didn't rush into a right back, if I remember rightly. I think we played a season without a right back on the roster.
See, I told you.
Yep.
It was that the Quella Melberg years as right wing backs.
Good grief. When we weren't thinking, maybe this Rio Coca could be a good right back.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was bizarre. Our football team doesn't, like, when you sit down and you've got a bit of money because you've got a new owner, doesn't actually go to the trouble of at least buying a first 11 that actually plays in their positions.
No.
Too simple, that as a concept.
Very progressive.
Right, Mark Delaney. I mean, also a good number of caps for Wales as well. So I think if you were Mark Delaney as a football man and look back at your career, I think you'd be pretty satisfied with what you did, you know, as a pro without, you know, having a big... Has he got into Toto medals?
I would have thought so, he'd have been in and around that team.
Yeah.
There's some European honours, as you'd call it.
Yeah, European honours. There you go. Great career.
Mm.
Right. And I've, you know, he played in the FA Cup. I didn't want to mention that because it's not...
No.
I don't want to mention he was in that.
I do remember he scored a cracker against Watford, though, very, very early in his Villa career. It was a great goal.
Well, you're the only one, Chris.
Barely ever scored one since.
Fullbacks tend to score cracking goals. They don't score many of them, but they do tend to go
between
for the spectacular.
Him and Alan Wright,
even Staunton as well.
Oh, and you can't mention Mark Delaney and Alan Wright, right in the same sentence. Goodness.
Right, anyway, let's go overrated or underrated. What are you saying?
I'm going to go underrated. Especially considering what we paid for him. Was it like £500,000 or something to stay at the club for, I think it was 7 or 8 years? Great bit of business.
Yeah, and get a decent amount of performances considering some of the cash we've squandered and some of the people we've squandered it on that we've mentioned in this section. So yeah, I'll go underrated as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go underrated on the basis of fee.
Right. Okay, right. Now on to Charles Nzogbia.
Quick,
Charles Nzogbia.
Gentlemen, sharpen your tools.
Right, so the reason why we bought Charles Nzogbia was we had to appease the Pitchfork Brigade as we sold Ashley Young, pretty much the man who, I think he was probably instrumental in Martin O'Neill's success. He was the main one. I think he was probably the best buy.
Yeah.
So we sold him for a shed load of cash to United. And I think, I mean, making a big generalisation here, but I think Charles Nzogbia was about like a half price replacement.
Oh, yeah.
In
all respects.
Not cheap, though.
No, it was a £10 million buy, something like £9 million pound buy?
Something like nine, I think. Yeah, nine is a figure that rings true to me.
Not cheap for then, and not cheap considering we had, inverted commas, no money.
But didn't he say, I always remember him when he was, who was he at before Wigan? Was it Newcastle?
Yes.
Yeah.
When he was talking about he should be going to Arsenal, he was talking about he should be playing Champions League football and he should be playing for teams like Arsenal, and he ends up at Wigan. And then you start to think, here's somebody who, there was rumours of, and I don't think we really did that due diligence on him, but bad attitude was something that was always labelled at him.
Definitely.
At the same time, he used to score some fucking amazing goals for Wigan. And, you know, he was a bit of a match of the day highlights man.
So he did Emil Heskey, David.
No, but he would pop up scoring some worldies. So I think that's what Villa were thinking. They were thinking, well, less of this bad attitude might go on strike, might sulk. It's he was called a sulk, wasn't he?
Le Sulk.
Yeah, forget about Le Sulk. Let's concentrate on these clips here. And, you know, this will bedazzle the fans who are still mourning and wanting to know what's going to happen in terms of replacing Ashley Young.
We were beguiled by, he was your classic kind of player who from afar, like you say, you see the clips, and he always seemed to play really, really well against us, often down the right against Mark Delaney. No. but He always looked brilliant everywhere. And it's the kind of like, I don't know, maybe when you're making like relationship decisions, you go, well, no, they're not crazy. It's just good character. They're not sulky. It's just they're dark and mysterious.
Yeah, no, melancholic. No, no.
They didn't try and kill me. They're just passionate.
Well, that's an insight into Mr. But. But it was immediately a disaster, and I think Nzogbia traded off, like a lot of players who were fantastic and brilliant and world class in their own heads. He traded off a few singular moments that he was on the Sky highlight reel, if you like, wasn't he?
Yeah.
But he
basically kept wigging up, didn't he? One year towards the end of the one season.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was one of those players that, going back to the relationship, it's like the girl with the abusive relationship where, oh, you know, I'll make him come good, you know, I'll cure him. And that's what we thought in Zogbia. We thought, you know, if we can get him doing what he did for Wigan, we'll be all right here.
Yeah.
And anybody who was reading between the lines or did any due diligence just thought, yeah, stay clear of him. It's like when you cast a film and you're a director and you're picking your actors, you want to work with actors who aren't arseholes. So you will talk to other directors who have worked with that actor, and you'll get a bit of a background check, because you don't want to be spending, you know, 3 months, 6 weeks, whatever, with a pain in the ass. And that's why, I mean, from my experience of meeting, you know, most of the actors over like 10 years of meeting him, most of the people you meet are like all, you know, all good people. And you think, ah, that's why they got all the jobs, because they're just like, they're easy to get on with, and that's half the battle most of the time. And I think with Nzogbia, you would have just looked at him as a human being and just said, yeah, it's not worth it.
No.
The percentages are, you know, one wonder goal for every 25 games of not tracking back and doing nothing.
And can suffer from the classic modern footballer syndrome of nothing's my fault either, and, you know, absolutely can't be blamed for anything. And relatively new-ish when he was playing for us, but vocal on social media as well.
Yeah, wasn't he half?
He only scored 4 goals for Villa, by the way. In like 5 years, he was in and out.
Admittedly, two of those goals he did score, though, were actually really big goals.
Yeah. But he traded off that his entire career, didn't he?
He was one of the first in the bomb squad, and he became one of those that we were looking at, saying, calling them leeches, draining the club on these ridiculous wages. That was the stick that he was beaten with most of the time, was he was draining our club because he was on like 60,000 or whatever. And I mean, he reckoned more when somebody took the piss, but I don't know if he was just winding them up. But I think it was his last chance, his last hurrah, was when Sherwood came in. And as managers that come into a dire situation, they look around the squad and go, oh, he used to be good. Oh, you know, I've seen him on Match of the Day. And he looked at Nzogbia and he thought, right, well, the only chance I've got of sorting this shit show out is getting some of these players to give me performances. And, you know, he tried to get Nzogbia going. I mean, he started the Liverpool semi-final in the FA Cup, and started in the first 11 for the Arsenal game. I mean, he was soon subbed off after, I think it was like about 53 minutes, and a very unfit Gabby came on for him. But I think in the Liverpool game, I think Sherwood made that tactical switch where he played Grealish, who had played his first Premier League game like 2 weeks before, less than two weeks before. And he played them as two number 10s, kind of in the pockets in front of the back four of Liverpool. So they didn't really, I think, what's the word he used? Sherwood said he bamboozled them. So
the shock of seeing him.
He's playing.
What?
He's playing in Nzogbia.
The French Fenton?
Yeah, no, he did a French Fenton with him. Yeah. His best contribution, from a fan point of view, was just entertaining fans on Twitter with some of his spats with people. I mean, he was. I think he didn't ask Sean Teal to. He retorted to Sean Teal when, what was Sean Teal saying to him when he told him that he should be polishing his cars?
Yeah, when Teal went, you should be polishing your skills for the weekend. Oh, I forget you don't get selected because no one rates you. And he came back with, I should be out polishing my cars because I don't rate you either.
No, Sean Teal should be out polishing my cars because I don't rate you either.
And then pretty much finished his Villa career by saying, I've been put into an iceberg with chains around it. They have thrown the keys into the deep ocean.
AKA the bomb squad. What was the what was his greatest contribution, would you say, to be in the positives?
I remember a really important free kick against West Ham.
In front of the Holt End.
In front of the Holt End, yeah, it was a great goal.
He scored against Manchester City in that cup game, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he scored what would have been the winner that night in extra time in the horrible green kit, but he was also part of the team that completely imploded at Bradford.
Oh, God.
So those would probably be his two sort of more high-profile moments.
He should be banned from the club if he was in that team that got beat by Bradford.
Over two legs.
And Millwall the weekend after. I just remember like him on Twitter, stupid outfits and the lifestyle. I don't remember much of him on the field, if I'm honest.
Well, Lansbury's just the new Nzogbia,
absolutely,
basically.
Well, I said the Lansbury life, which is what I call him, but you always get the feeling that Lansbury's a little bit more likeable with it.
Probably not as capable a footballer, ironically.
Yeah.
No, but far more professional and a better personality around the place. Whereas Nzogbia, you get the feeling he was just absolutely like toxic around the club.
I think his hat was fantastic. That, you remember that hat?
Is that with the flowery suit?
Well, you would wear this, what's the type of hat? But it would go with anything.
It's just like a fedora, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because he could pull it off. So you've got to give him props for that.
He turned up before a game, didn't he? In his full like training kit with this stupid hat on.
But he could pull it off. Somehow it worked for him. It wouldn't work for anybody, I don't think. Anybody
else. It
would work
for me. I just don't do it.
Anyway, I always remember there's a Villa fan on Twitter. She got into an exchange with him, and he said, "Well, I'll tell you over dinner." And he took her out, but I don't think it was like a Lecce thing. But she went for it, and you know they had a kind of chat, and I think he kind of explained his situation, but you know you don't know what's going on in these situations, or you know where he's at. I mean, I suppose in that situation where you've got the whole fan base hating on you, and if you are pissed off and you've been treating badly, because let's not forget the bomb squad was essentially five or six players being told, "Yeah, you're not playing," which was a weird situation because all these guys were like
all senior players, weren't they,
on big wages, and you're thinking this is a bizarre situation because Lambert's really trying to exert his authority.
It's not like we were even winning.
No, Breed is young, blood in, but it's hard to have them motivated if you've got all these people on crazy wages, are getting paid much bigger wages than they are and not actually playing. It's hard to find how their psychology works. And then he had to kind of go back and start to reintroduce these players, and then Sherwood came along and obviously got them all involved again. It was a real shit show there. I mean, the whole club was just stunk, and we're still trying to recover from that situation that's been rotting away for over a decade now. And hopefully, I mean, it's going to be a miracle, but if we can survive, that will be, I think it'll be a huge moment in Villa's history in terms of turning this ship around. Because if we go back down, then, you know, some of the old ways and thinking may come back and we might start to wallow. And then you turn into Leeds, Forest, Sheffield Wednesday, don't you?
Yes. I mean, it speaks for the guy, and I know there were supposedly problems. He discovered a heart condition, didn't he? Which when he left Villa in 2016,
his heart wasn't in it.
Well, no, and he was obviously looking for a new club and was looking to go back to France. I believe it was Nantes, and they obviously he didn't pass the medical
because he was meant to go to India, and then he just kind of disappeared because he was even attributed to a club. And then he just disappeared off the radar.
So basically, because he'd had a pretty serious heart condition, by all accounts, similar to things like Fabrice Muamba, and there's quite a few players who have these underlying issues, and they don't, you know, sometimes tragically, they don't realise until it's too late.
Yeah.
I know James Taylor, the cricketer, had something kind of similar, and they discovered it, and he had to retire the next day. So I think it looks like it's something very similar to that, where Nzogbia had left Villa, was looking, you know, as a free agent, looking at what his options were, managed to find a club, didn't pass the medical. Once you start looking at, well, why haven't I passed? Then, of course, you open up a can of worms, and I think it would have become quite apparent because he's not an old guy even now. He's still only be about 33 now, and he's been out of football for 4 years.
Yeah. Do we know what he's doing now?
A relatively young guy to, you know, retire when he did.
I mean, it'd be interesting, actually. I remember him... he had a custom-made poker table that said lifestyle on it because that became his catchphrase, isn't it? His hashtag or whatever. Anyway, let's wrap this up. Mr. Charles Nzogbia, overrated or underrated?
Unbelievably overrated.
unbelievably, incredibly, without a shadow of a doubt, underrated.
Yeah, I thought it was underrated. If only they just gave him a chance. didn't put him in the bomb squad. We would have won that FA Cup because he'd have felt more loved, and then he would have put on a performance, and we'd have hammered Arsenal.
And then he'd have got his big move that he felt
he wanted a free role, a flamboyant role.
He would have scored a hat trick against Arsenal. We'd have won the FA Cup. Then Arsenal would have said, "We want a bit of that," and they'd have bought him the next season.
£50 million.
Or it wouldn't have been a floppy-haired messiah named Grealish who'd have been the poster boy for Villa. It'd be a stroppy Frenchman.
It'd have been happy endings all round. Villa win the FA Cup, finally. Charles and Zogbia gets his dream move to Arsenal, and everybody lived happily ever after.
On that note,
I'm going overrated in his own lifetime. Right, that was two players that Dan Rogers still has posters of above his bed.
Oh, yeah. Next right, to Alan Wright.
thank you very much for joining us once again. If you are not of the faint-hearted, please do join us in Match Club for Survival Sunday. It should be a bit of an epic one there. And please do subscribe on Spotify, on iTunes, or any other good podcast app. We appear in them all. Right, until next time, any final words, gents?
There's a job to do. Let's get it done now.
I'm not concerned. It'll all be fine. What could possibly go wrong?
It's like a sprint for home now, isn't it?
No, Chris, it's more like, you know, those marathon races where you got the person who's walking bow-legged and swaying to the left or right.
Is it more like, was it the Brownlee brothers who one of them had to carry him over the line?
The finishing line's in sight, but your body's breaking down rapidly. Can we get over the line? We'll find out that by the next time we speak.
Yeah, by 6 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah. It'll be fine. I don't know what you're worried about.
Right. Until then, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Villa friends. What was the other one? We had a Mark Delaney song. I can't remember what it was. Mark Delaney, he'll sleep with your nan, Mark Delaney, he was cheaper than Spam. That was the words.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.